Having looked at the overall background of the UN and of UN Habitat in Chapter 1, in Chapter 2 we will look at the specific history of UN Habitat. So can you identify, over the 30 and more years of existence of this organization, specific periods in UN Habitat's development?
Thank you. Habitat, as you know, was decided, the creation of Habitat was decided in 1976 in Vancouver at the first UN Conference on Human Settlements. That conference decided to establish Habitat, and after the conference, negotiation took place, which ended deciding that Habitat will be in Kenya, in Nairobi. It was a heavy discussion, particularly within the G77 group, including between India and Kenya, to host the headquarters of UN Habitat. At that time it was called UNCHS, United Nations Center for Human Settlements. And finally, after this discussion, it was agreed that UNCHS will be based in Nairobi and will be headed by an Indian executive director. Therefore, Habitat was created in 1978, 2 years after the conference, and established in Nairobi, in fact, in downtown Nairobi, in what is called the KICC, Kenyatta International Conference Center, the big tower in town. So this was 78, and the first executive director was Dr. Arkot Ramachandran, a scientist from India, from Bangalore, who was to become executive director for 14 years indeed. That is the longest serving executive director. At that time there was no time limit for Undersecretary General. So we were created in 78, 79 I would say, by combining in fact existing units in New York, which was the CHPP, Center for Housing, Building and Planning, and also the Foundation for Human Settlements, which was part of UNEP at that time. So small units, small organization, 30 people, and then Habitat took off. Under this leadership of Dr. Ramachandran, Habitat focused essentially on shelter. Shelter for the poor, shelter for all, shelter for the homeless. And first, in fact, major initiative of Dr. Ramachandran was to pass, to promote a resolution by the General Assembly to declare the year 1987 the International Year of Shelter for the Homeless. This was a major breakthrough and the first really big activity of Habitat to organize this international year, which brought the issue of homelessness to the fore of the international debate. In the meantime, Habitat was working essentially on shelter, building materials and technical issues. So this was the year, Shelter for the Homeless, and it was followed in 1988, the year when I started, by the adoption of the Global Strategy for Shelter to the year 2000, when the goal of that strategy was to promote shelter for all, by the year 2000. As we will see, this goal, of course, was over-ambitious and was not met. But this was a slogan, this was a motto, and in 1988, December, the GA adopted this GSS 2000, which was followed by NSS, National Shelter Strategies, in many developing countries. This was the phase when I joined Habitat at that time, and Dr. Ramachandran was a relatively low-profile leader, but very, very precise and very, very, very appreciated by the staff. But soon, of course, he had reached more than 10 years, and he had to be replaced. And in 1992, he left. And unfortunately, he was not replaced immediately by an Undersecretary General. In fact, there was an idea from some member states to merge UN Habitat and UNCHS rather with UNEP. Of course, this idea was a lost cause, because the member country, particularly developing country, had no intention whatsoever to merge the two organizations, which have very different mandate and field of activities. Anyway, between 1992 and 1998, there was a second phase of turbulence. The first interim executive director was Elizabeth Dodswell in 93, but she was at the same time executive director of UNEP, so she had very little time for Habitat. She was followed 1 year later in 1994 by Walindao from Gambia. Walindao, who was essentially in charge of organizing the Istanbul Conference on Human Settlements in 1996, that is 20 years after Vancouver. And this conference was to be, in fact, and was really the peak of Habitat international meetings of the 90s. Wally organized the conference very well. It was a very big success, but unfortunately, we went into a relatively big deficit of like $2 million. And donor countries were not really happy with that deficit. And in 1997, in the Governing Council, what was called the Commission on Human Settlements at that time of 1997, the confidence of the donor countries, particularly European countries, vanished, and Wally had to go in the summer of 1997. So 1997 was a year of the crisis, the worst year of Habitat, while 1996, 1 year before, was probably one of the best years of Habitat. So success was followed by crisis. In 1998, 1 year later, Dr. Töpfer was appointed and started the revitalization of Habitat, which lasted 3 or 4 years, from 1998 to 2002. And he was replaced by Anati Bajuka in September 2000. Dr. Töpfer was also, like the Elizabeth Dodswell before, was also executive director of UNEP, so he had very little time to devote to the management of Habitat. So in fact, the phase between 1992 and 2000 was a phase without full-time USG at the head of Habitat. So there was no stability, because there was no stable and continuous executive director at proper level in Habitat. So this second phase, if you call Ramachandran's phase the first phase, from 78 to 92, the second phase was from 92 to 2000, with a series of leaders for a relatively short time, some of them not being full-time, in fact, linked to UNEP. And this was a period with unclear leadership, but this second period was also a very innovative period. It was also a period where managers were free to innovate, to create programs, to launch initiatives, because the leadership of Habitat was less concerned with micromanagement. So I would say this year, 92 to 2000, was a time where we introduced new programs, new priorities, new concepts. For instance, this where, for the first time, the idea of focusing on urban poverty eradication as the top priority of Habitat emerged. This was also the time where the concept of good urban governance was promoted and appeared in 96 at Istanbul. It was not immediately recognized or accepted by member states, but progressively at the end of the 90s was fully accepted and became, in fact, a campaign of Habitat on urban governance. This was also the time where our first work on the disaster and reconstruction started in 93-94. And I remember in 93 sharing a working group on the funding, on the funding of UN Habitat, where we identified the key topics, 5 or 6 key topics like poverty, governance, disasters, which were to be the top priorities of Habitat in the 10 or 15 years to come. And we were absolutely free to discuss that. We had a lot of internal discussion among managers, senior and middle managers, and we moved out of the shelter focus of the Ramachandran era. We opened the topics of Habitat to urbanization, to urban management, to disaster governance, etc. So this was really a very, in fact, enjoyable period of time. Of course, with up and downs, as I said already, and ending on a very good revitalization process starting at the end of 98 under the leadership of Dr. Töpfer. So this was really the second period of Habitat. And the third period of Habitat started in September 2000 when Madame Tibaljuka was appointed as Executive Director of Habitat, first as ASG, then later on as USG. And then we had the third period of Habitat from 2000 to 2010 for 10 years. So this is basically the three phases, if you will. And now we are just opening the fourth phase with our new executive director. But so far we had three phases, 78-92, 92-2000, and 2000-2010. I should say that when you are a manager in this kind of organization, UN organization, you have to be ready to adjust the agenda, but you have also your task, your responsibility is to influence the agenda. To influence the agenda because usually your leader, your executive director, is not an expert in our field, in human settlements, but is more a politician. So you have to, in fact, to coach your executive director and promote new ideas. But to do so, you need, of course, a kind of consensus among senior managers to go in the same direction. And this kind of consensus, I think, has been missing in the last few years in Habitat. Another feature of UN organization is, and I will discuss that later on in another chapter, is the lack of internal democracy and the fact that despotism is more the rule than the exception. So this is also something to keep in mind. With more discussion, of course, among managers, you will get, of course, better focus of the organization.
Thank you for that piece of managerial advice. Can you please describe also the different program categories within UN Habitat and what sort of complementarity or overlap there has been between different programs?
As I said, the first big set of program was the Global Shelter Strategy. So this was focusing on shelter, and at that time, that is the end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s, we were helping countries to design national shelter strategies, so particularly least developed countries. So this was the first set of programs. In parallel, there was a specific program funded by Danida on community participation in urban settlements. In 92, we started a very important program, and probably the most important program of the history of Habitat, the Urban Management Program. It started in 92 in partnership with the World Bank and with UNDP. And it was to last from... in fact, it had started in 86 in the research phase. There was the first phase on research, but the capacity building phase started in 92. And the UMP was to last until the year 2003-2004. So it was, in total, it lasted 17 years, I think. So it was really a very long program, which achieved a lot in terms of research in this first phase, then in terms of capacity building, particularly at regional level. We had regional advisors, regional coordinators in the four developing regions, that is in Asia, Arab states, Africa, and Latin America. And after capacity building, we moved into city consultation, helping selected cities in designing their own development plan that we call city strategy. So I would say UMP in the history of Habitat so far has been the number one, the first program in terms of importance, and also combining international organizations, I mentioned already World Bank and UNDP, with bilateral organization, bilateral agencies from the Netherlands, from Sweden, from Switzerland, Germany, France, etc. So it was really a multi-bilateral program of major importance. Attached to the UMP, we had a specific program on the urban environment called the Sustainable Cities Program, which was also quite visible, which associated UNEP in addition to the other partners, and which developed a lot of tools for cities to take care, to be used for cities to take care of their environmental problem. We had, as I mentioned, the beginning of the disaster management program in around 94-95, which is still going on and helping countries to rebuild themselves either after natural or human-made disasters. So DMP was born in the around 95, and it's still one of the most important programs of Habitat, because as a UN we have to support the reconstruction of countries devastated by all kinds of disasters. Another program worth mentioning is the Indicator Program, which built a monitoring system all over the world on the state of cities. Unfortunately, this program has not been well funded, but it remains an important challenge for Habitat to collect urban data and analyze them for producing regional and global reports on the evolution of cities. So these are a few of the key programs of Habitat, and they led to some international conferences like the Urban Environment Forum, the International Forum on Urban Poverty, and later on to the World Urban Forum created in 2002. So this is the kind of programs we had. What is important, and I think this was your question, is that these programs were interlinked. That is, they were covering the two major topics of Habitat, housing and urbanization, but they had some overlap, and overlap were in fact pair design. That is, for instance, the overlap between UMP, Urban Management Program, and SCP, Sustainable City Program, was very important, because UMP had one component on the environment. So in fact the team in Habitat in charge of UMP environment was the same as the team in charge of SCP. And the relation, for instance, between DMP, the Disaster Management Program, and what we used to do on shelter, on housing, was also very strong. People involved in shelter reconstruction were also involved in shelter policy. So there was a number of links, but the difficulty was to link also the division, the institutional structure of Habitat. This was more difficult, because at that time, and in the 90s, Habitat was divided in a research division, so-called research division, and technical cooperation division. And later on, I mean, in the year 2000, they became a global division and technical cooperation division. So this organization by function and not by topic was really not the best organization, and I will come back to that. So the functional organization, which is basically the key organizational principle of UN agencies, is not probably the best option. I would prefer a topical organization under housing and urbanization, but this has also some constraint.
Of course, looking over and overseeing these different functional organizations requires an executive director with quite strong capacities. Having worked at UN Habitat with all of the organization's executive directors, you surely have insights pertaining to each one. What are your impressions about each of your EDs?
This is quite a delicate question, but as I'm retiring soon, I can take some risk in responding frankly, without any waffle to that. I would say I've been recruited by Dr. Ramachandran in the 80s, and I have kept good contact with him later on. In fact, Dr. Ramachandran was a scientist, but not an expert in human settlements. He left a memory of being very meticulous, knowing exactly what everybody was doing in the agency, but a bit conservative as well, not trying to expand Habitat too much, keep Habitat under control, focusing essentially on shelter, including building techniques, for instance, accepting some earmark contribution. I already mentioned Danida, but not too many earmark contribution. So it was really good management, but relatively low profile. Habitat had to grow, in fact, at that time. Of course, from the beginning, there was some problem in staff selection, but I will come back to staff selection in another chapter. When Elizabeth Dotswell came, I remember in 93, just for 1 year, she came from UNEP, so she brought the environmental fiber to Habitat, and this is at the time where we opened the Eastern European portfolio. The transition countries was just after the collapse of the Soviet Union, so we went together to some countries like Romania, for instance, but really she was devoting, I would say, 4 hours per week or 8 hours per week to Habitat. So clearly, there was, during that year, there was a kind of relatively weak leadership. And in fact, Elizabeth Dotswell didn't stay very long at UNEP. I think she spent only 5 years as the Undersecretary General for UNEP. So then came Wallindau. Wallindau, I think, was he came from UNDP. He was, in fact, a former UN resident coordinator. Wallindau was, I would say, by far the best executive director we ever had in terms of public relations and public speaking. He was really an excellent public speaker. He didn't need any write-up to make a speech, just a short briefing, very fast to understand the challenges, very easy in communicating with every partners, every kind of partners, women group, local authorities, NGOs, of kind of NGOs, governments, along a very humane approach. So he was really a good leader, but he was a poor administrator. And this was our problem, as I already mentioned, in the year 97, when we lost completely the confidence of the donor community. We had a small period of between the end of 97 and July 98 where Darshan Joal came as an interim ESG for Habitat. Darshan had been before one of the D2s of Habitat, so he was extremely knowledgeable, extremely friendly with the senior manager because he was part of us, but a little bit timid, and of course he knew that he was only in Habitat for a few months, so he could not take major initiatives. Then came Dr. Klaus Töpfer in July 98. He came and he was a minister in Germany before, minister of environment and also minister of town planning and construction, and he had been a key player in Istanbul Conference in 96, so he knew quite well Habitat. So he came, he was first executive director of UNEP, he was there in 97, but he took Habitat, in fact for 2 years, to start a revitalization process upon request from Kofi Annan, who was then the Secretary General. So Töpfer was, I think, an excellent and very fast politician. He understood very quickly what was to be done for Habitat. He created a revitalization team. He took me as his number two, as his deputy in July 98, and it took us only less than 10 months to rebuild the donor confidence, because we had the following year in 99 the Commission on Human Settlements, I think it was in May, and at that time there was a full support to Habitat. So it took just, I would say, 10 months to rebuild that confidence, and this was thanks to the vision of Töpfer and his knowledge also of the donor community. But Töpfer didn't want to stay with Habitat, and he had identified himself a candidate for the post of full-time executive director in the year 2000, and then came Anna Tibaijuka in September 2000. and she came from Geneva, where she was working in UNCTAD. I would say it's difficult for me to speak on Nati Bajuka, because she has been my direct boss for 10 years. So I was reporting to her for 10 years. So I would say I know her extremely well. I would say the most positive aspect is that she was a good fundraiser. She raised the profile of Habitat. She raised a lot of money for different projects, but with a tendency to focus on, I would say, our pet projects. And pet project meaning essentially project in Uganda, in Tanzania, in East Africa in general, and in a few countries. So she was able to twist the arms of Sweden, of Norway, of Spain also, but for specific activities. Again, a bit like Walindau, she was a relatively poor administrator, but I would say the main weakness is that she was too administrative and micromanaging human and financial resources with the support of a few bureaucrats of Habitat located in the so-called program support division. So that's that would say this was the main problem we had at that time, was the fear of being evaluated badly by member states in administrative terms. Administrative controls increased a lot during the last years. So I think the new executive director will have a lot to do to improve essentially the administration of Habitat, which has become relatively, I would not say useless, but almost.
Thank you very much for that enthralling insight into the history of UN Habitat. I'm sure you'll have lots of advice to give us in the following chapters to see what exactly can be done to improve these administrative failures.